Okay, so, yeah, we should try that one. Want us to look at this first, or?
Yeah. So what I was doing is that I was doing clustering on the outputs.
Okay.
Is that what we agreed before? Like, we did clustering on the outputs. So what it does is just basically form several groups and put those output into those groups.
Okay.
Or those number into groups.
Okay.
So the idea is to find a way that this output corresponds to some input pattern. I mean, those clustering. So, for example, this input corresponds to, or this output corresponds to that kind of input combination, or that pattern of input combination. So, that's the way to figure out to clustering.
Okay.
I mean, the results from the clustering. That's the way to interpret.
Okay.
So, I did some very simple k-means clustering.
Okay.
So I was just trying with k-means clustering. In k-means, you need to provide the number of groups.
Okay.
How many groups you want to segment.
Yeah.
So I tried to first with like big number, like 5 or 6.
Uh-huh.
And then I thought, I found that if you keep it too large, or in this case maybe 5 or 6, what was happening is that there's too much overlap between the input patterns. I mean, it's very hard to segregate when you look at the inputs.
Mm. How is it that are you saying that the outputs are, hello? Yeah, I have to call you back because I'm in a meeting. Yeah? So, I'm just wondering that if there are more clusters and these clusters are based on output parameter values, why do more clusters result in more overlap?
It's not that overlap because thing is that you can do, because when you ask a query, you need to think about that, okay, I mean, which cluster should we send the query to?
Okay.
So if there is too much overlap between, I cannot specifically say, okay, which cluster I can send the query to. Because I don't know the output at that moment when you send the query.
So aren't we doing the clustering to determine what kind of models we should create depending on the input parameter ranges that those clusters correspond to?
I mean, you cannot do the input clustering on the input parameter. You need to, because you need to do some clustering on the output parameters.
Correct, but each output parameter has a corresponding input parameter.
Yeah, but if all the input combination has to follow a pattern.
Yes.
If the pattern is mismatched, there is too much overlap in the pattern, or you don't follow a pattern in the inputs, then it's very complicated when you send a query to the model.
Right, I understand that, but what I'm wondering is why would fewer clusters result in lesser overlap? You might still have overlap even with
I have overlap in two clusters too. But when you ask to write a query, it would be easier to write when there are fewer clusters. If it's too many clusters and there are a lot of overlap, you need to probably send the query to many clusters, or you need to break the query, you need to analyze the input in greater detail.
The question is, the problem with just that output is how to determine that how many clusters you need.
Mm.
That question will come up. So the ideal way would be to apply a clustering algorithm that doesn't require that input, the number of cluster input.
Mm.
That would be an easy solution.
That would be ideal, but that would be ideal for writing a paper. But the question is, can I use it? That's the question. I mean, if I cannot use it when I ask to write a query, then it will be very difficult.
You don't know, because whatever you're intuitionally saying, that less overlap or more overlap, that logically makes sense, but that cannot be your argument of deciding how many clusters you have.
I think
so.
Yeah.
So to incorporate that argument, you need to have a automatic way of determining the how many clusters you have based on the distance or the number of papers on that. So if you incorporate that, then finding the number of clusters, you're delegating that to the cluster algorithm. You don't need to worry about that. You just get the cluster and see that how much overlap you have. If it is getting too much overlap, then you can think, okay, whether to how to solve that problem, how to build the heuristic. Say, for example, Ning last time gave a heuristic, like take the Minium error or something like that. But I think that should be the approach, rather than applying an algorithm that you have another parameter. Because more parameter you bring in, the more you have to defend. And it becomes more complex in terms of writing the paper.
Or just find the number of groups I need based on some algorithm, and then using that number feed into those algorithms.
Absolutely, but in that case you will reinvent the wheel, because finding the groups that's already there in the cluster literature.
Right. Yeah, I think finding the groups may already be there, but that still doesn't solve the more basic problem of what if there is overlap in the input domain.
Yeah, if there is overlap, we have to follow some heuristic or something like that, depending on how much overlap we are getting. Because one of the objectives of the cluster algorithm is, of course, from the cluster algorithm perspective, that you want to minimize the overlap on the output parameter, of course, because the output is in this case. Now, how the output translates into the input and how much overlap you have on the input, that will more depend on how segregated these clusters are. If the clusters are in this distance, then it's very much unlikely that it will have the input overlap, the input parameter overlap, the similar memory or the similar CPU or similar IO bandwidth, and giving the different completely different output. But if it is in this range, of course there will be overlap on the output. And I think that in the cluster algorithm that automatically finds the cluster based on number of clusters based on the data is focused on this thing. Minimize it, because in the cluster what you're trying to do is you're trying to maximize the distance between the two clusters but minimize the inter-distance. Maximize the inter-distance but minimize the inter-distance. So it's a two-dimensional optimization. So the K-Main algorithm is basically focuses on the inter-distance.
Right.
Just on the inter-distance. It doesn't focus on the inter, because inter is taken care of by the number of means. But if you have a algorithm that balances these two optimizations early, then probably you solve the problem.
Right. That's a good point. And I feel that in terms of the overlap, we have to define overlap very carefully. Right? What exactly we mean by overlap. It's possible that there is overlap in one input domain, but then a different input domain there is no overlap. So we have to possibly pick the model to work with based on the input domain where there is the least overlap or there is no overlap. So in your experience, what did you find in that respect?
Okay, in Ruby, it varies in different benchmarks. For example, in Ruby's bidding workload specifically, there is very less overlap, maybe one or two data points.
But when you say, that's why I wanted to stress the definition of overlap and be more specific. Overlap along which input domain and which input parameter?
Overlap along either CPU or memory.
Okay. So right now we have effectively only two parameters.
Two control parameters.
So you're saying that given a CPU value, that CPU value can occur into both models, and then that would be an overlap for that specific CPU allocation parameter value.
Yes.
But when you also look at memory now, maybe only one of the models can address that specific memory value. That actually, in my book, means no overlap, because for that combination of input parameters, both models are not able to service or adequately handle that input.
The point you're trying to make is that it's also the part of the clustering literature, clustering research, is that you have done the cluster. Now a new point comes up. In each cluster, that new point belongs to.
Right.
That's the decision you have to take. That's exactly the decision you're trying to take.
Yes.
Only difference is, on the cluster detection, what we'll find is that new point dimension is the output, and it will be easier to map the output versus output and find out which cluster it belongs to. But in this case, he has to define some distance measurement, really, because once the cluster is formed, then cluster will be defined not by the output. Then you forget the output. Then the cluster is defined by the input set. Really. You have all these values. This input set defines this cluster.
Right.
This input set defines this cluster. Really.
Right.
Now you get a new input set. The question is, in which cluster that input set belongs to?
Mm-hmm.
There may be, and that's a measurement basically, more a distance measurement or something like that. In very crude way, I can say a distance measurement what may work, really. But there may be some other complicated way of measuring it. You get what I said?
Mm-hmm. So were you able to do that kind of analysis? Maybe
I did.
Not in detail, but some analysis in that direction.
Yes, actually that's what I was talking about.
Okay.
So take an example, otherwise it would not
work. Let's look at something.
Okay, like Ruby's beading, for example, I do it three clusters.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say three clusters is the ideal one,
okay.
But then what it does is that anything in 256 megabyte,
yeah,
less than or equal to 256 megabyte, it puts into a one specific cluster, irrespective of the CPU values.
Okay. So... Right, so I guess the question is, you're arguing that at least in the low memory range, the cluster that you want to pick is cluster number 2, because most of the points with low memory go into that cluster.
Exactly.
Are there any points with 256 that go into a different cluster?
No.
Okay. So, from my point of view, then all of in the parameter range of 256 megabytes, there is no overlap at all for three clusters.
For three clusters.
So what happens when you move to 6 or 7 clusters?
I started with 5. There's no overlap.
Still no overlap. For 256 megabytes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because it's very well defined in 256, the behavior.
Okay.
If it's not a well defined behavior, then it's a problem. Then it's a problem.
Okay. So. You're saying everything that's 256 megabytes is actually in cluster 2.
Then it's a low CPU.
Then
there is another cluster which is like less than or equal to 600 megahertz CPU value. It forms another cluster.
Right here. So number 3.
Number 3. So anything less than 600 megahertz CPU value. Now the memory becomes irrespective.
Now, well, what if you have 200 and 256?
It will follow because anything less than 256 you need to put into the cluster.
But how will you formalize that?
Right. So
it's very easy to write a program on that.
No, but I mean, how
do you automate? For example, I say 200 and 128.
It will pick the cluster too.
Why?
I mean, anything less than 256 is belongs to cluster 2.
What is the intuition behind that statement? Because we don't have any points that represent 128 here.
Yeah.
I think one intuition could be that the output value for 200 and 128 is going to be lower than 200 and 256,
mm-hmm,
or equal.
Mm-hmm.
And 200 and 256 defines in a cluster that has the lowest output
defined,
value.
Yeah, it's a defined. That's a explanation kind of thing, but I would like to see a
more formal
function, some kind of mathematical function.
Hmm.
That okay, if I have the CPU memory IO share, this is the computation I do, and by this computation I can.
There are a lot of values which will we need to decide. For example, 200 may be easier, but let's say 300.
Hmm.
300 would be very hard to pick out. I can pick, say, like cluster 3, or it could belong in cluster 2. I don't know which cluster to select.
No, but 400, and then it depends on what is the memory value. Still 256?
No, let's
300 megabyte memory.
Well.
Oh, 300 megabyte.
Where do you want to put it? I don't know, because my training data doesn't have anything with 300 megabyte.
True.
Yeah, and that's the reason why you need a formal definition of a function. If you can define a function that.
No, but definition has to be followed by because I'm not sure at this point that why I would, because maybe the function would say okay it belongs, but it may not be accurate. In that case, we need to use global model. If some point which we are confused that with the function cannot define, we need to use a global model for that.
Then I agree. How to determine that okay which cluster to use and which when to when you're saying global model, how to determine that?
That's based on if it's very well defined function, we can use sub clustering method, and if the point combination doesn't belong to a well defined function or well defined cluster, then we should use a global model in those cases. For example, anything to fit less than 256.
I'll give an example. Say, for example, I get a data value of 200 and 272 megabytes. 272 is, to my intuition, I'll probably fit it to the cluster 2 because it's more near to the 256, 200-256 rather than 200-384, probably. Than to the global model. So it's a fuzzy function. It will be a fuzzy function earlier.
But in many cases, I found that it's actually inaccurate, those kind of assumptions to make.
Hmm.
272 now, is well-defined, but let's say 400 and 800 gigahertz. Because when I first collecting the data, I had data for 400 megahertz CPU, 800 megahertz CPU. So I picked up like random value of 600 megahertz to see that where it belongs. To my amazing, that 600 megahertz belongs close to 800 megahertz. So if we use clustering, it's for the equidistant points, it's very hard to say that whether to pick a 4 or whether to pick 6. Maybe the saturation comes at 500 megahertz.
So
in those cases, global model is the better way to, it's a safer way to do.
Whenever you're saying that okay, it will not work, you have certain logic in your mind.
Mm-hmm.
You need to flesh out this logic in a formal way. It may be a function, it may be a logic or something, but that needs to be fleshed out because it will again go back to your training technique. Then like okay, you know that okay, well, if a point comes up, then which cluster to follow to put in. That will break the autonomous scenario. That formalization is secret.
I agree completely that. I mean, when you write a research paper, one of the key goals of that paper is that people are able to utilize your work and are able to reproduce what you did. So for the reproducibility, everything you describe has to be well defined and formal, as much as systems papers can get formal, right? Because other people need to be able to do exactly what you did and get exactly the same outcome.
Okay.
So this is good. I think this is at least gives us some ammunition. The other thing I was wondering is that yes, if the clusters are not well separated across
input parameters,
at least one input parameter dimension. Let's say two clusters overlap in all input parameter dimensions, then we could take two approaches. One is figure out which one it is closer to somehow, or second, go for the global model instead of any of these individual models, or third, we could do some sort of ensembling across these two models which overlap for this specific point. Right, ensembled averaging of some sort. So these are the kinds of things that you could try out and see what actually works in practice better. Which one gives you the least error and the best prediction accuracy? Any of these alternatives may turn out to be, you know, more useful across a range of different workloads. And if we see, okay, this actually works better and uniformly works well for all the workloads, then we can try and find some justification as to why. The alternate approach, I mean, this is sort of reverse engineering. Alternate approach is, well, you understand, come up with a proposal to say, okay, this is why I think this approach would work the best. And there you have your own reasoning and maybe understanding of the theory of these clustering techniques and the models behind the ANN. And then you validate your hypothesis. And then you say, okay, it is validated with this data. And even that is fine. Either reverse engineer or come up with a formal approach and validate.
Okay.
But at least this gives, the data gives at least a sense that clustering is a, is not off the mark process in the whole steps of subcomponent analysis.
So we have yet to cross the final step of the bridge, which is use the clusters to do the prediction.
Absolutely, absolutely.
And
I think that that complete cycle needs to be done. Otherwise, it will be very difficult to find.
No, according to my intuition, for some benchmarks, it would work because I tried with combination intuitively on my own.
You mean,
so for example, Ruby speeding, where this is so segregated, it will work perfectly. But for example, file bench, there is the input in all the domains are messed up. So on inputs are lying on many domains across. So
even for Ruby speeding, I mean, like we discussed, there are some boundary points which we don't know what to do with.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And that may be the tricky part of this work.
That's the tricky part.
So I think you have to address all of these questions. There may be other workloads where you just cannot create multiple models at all. You just have to go with the global model and really that's it.
Yeah, and but that situation also needs to be formally defined.
Yeah.
In what scenario that like, this is not
right.
Possible.
But how to define the format?
So you have to define it using some function of either the mapping from input to the output according to the model itself, or based on how many clusters you get using your clustering algorithm, or based on not just how many clusters you get, but how much overlap there is across the clusters in terms of the input parameter dimension. So it's like, if you see that, oh, all the clusters overlap in this one input dimension, and therefore I should not be using clustering at all. So that is one formal way in which you can dismiss clustering altogether.
Okay.
But then people have a way to do that for themselves, for their own
okay.
workloads.
Okay.
Right?
Got it. Should we use observable parameters as clustering? This will be very tricky also.
Well, at this point, anything and everything is on the table. So if you think that somehow the, you know, the observed
the
parameter...
The problem with the observable parameter, basically the VM latency, the problem is that the boundaries are not defined.
Hmm.
Could be anywhere.
Hmm.
It's not 200, 400, 600, it's just some random value.
Hmm. But I see the VM latency also as an input parameter in some sense. I mean, if the VM latency is too high, that could actually be the bottleneck parameter for you, irrespective of how
in
much CPU
like
or memory you allocate.
In file bench, that parameter, that's why, but that's the reason the all the input like CPU or memory are overlapped because of the VM latency. Because
exactly.
when it becomes the bottleneck, it throttles everything.
Right, so just like you have CPU and memory, I would expect that you would also have VM latency as one of the parameters that you would map back your output into. And when you create your input your clusters according to the input parameters. Or map your clusters to input ranges. I think restricting it to just CPU and memory is seems immediately not viable for me. Because you yourself said that there are some latency values that just cause bottleneck. And then your CPU and memory are meaningless at that point.
I think the output clustering makes sense.
Output clustering certainly makes sense, but what I'm saying is that in the when you map that to input parameters to figure out which model to use, you have to also include that VM latency observed parameter.
What will be good to have is that you do the one thing else is that apply clustering techniques, not the k-means clever. So some clustering techniques that you have the
number of clusters.
So then once they apply the cluster, complete the full cycle, and then see that which are the points that are not leaving you.
With the number of clusters he provided, I mean, not using my own.
Not only providing your own, but with the number of clusters that is providing the system.
Then figure out, okay, how it's going.
Then complete the complete cycle, okay, for each cluster, build a sub-component, then do the data transfer, do the input output again for the actual data.
Right.
And then see, okay, how much error you are getting. Then only you can figure it out.
I think it would be good to sort of formally discuss the whole process,
exactly.
The way you're describing it, right? And because there at each step there are multiple possibilities.
Another important question is that how do you translate from output to input, because right now I'm just looking at the Excel data and figure out on my own.
Correct. So you have to say, okay, I have, my first step is to collect training data, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then second is clustered according, or I should say based on output
application performance
output parameter. And here you could do multiple clustering techniques. Right, you can try here many different ones, and maybe one of those work, or some of them work, others don't. Right, and then the third is create, or I should say define input parameter ranges for sub models. Right. And here again, multiple ways of doing it. Right. Mm-hmm. And once you do that, then you have
train and test.
Train individual sub models. Choose target. It may be that you train several models and you realize that some models actually don't make sense. Right? And then you have to define a process for using global/sub-models for a given
input
parameter. And here again there are multiple possibilities. So these are all the steps that I think you have to formalize. Some of them may be obvious, others may be more challenging.
Mm-hmm.
So if you run through all of these steps with the data that you already have, and at least vet one possibility here, and one possibility here, for us to get a sense for what your prediction accuracy looks like, right, with this approach.
Number three is the most challenging here.
Number three is certainly one of the challenging, and also, I mean, here, I mean, although you might have sub-models and there may be some, there's also possible that you have overlap,
mm-hmm.
right, in the input parameter ranges. I mean, here, we're not saying that the parameter ranges have to be non-overlapping. You may define input parameter ranges that are overlapping and create sub-models.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, you might have to. I mean, you may not have a choice in some cases.
Yes.
But overlapping, I want to come back to your point. Overlapping one dimension doesn't make any difference.
True.
Overlapping in the three dimensions.
Right.
So the probability.
In all three dimensions.
All three dimensions. So probability
right.
is probably very less.
Right.
I'm not sure how much. I would, at least intuitively, it seems to me that, okay, that's a remote possibility of
that. Right. That might be one of the criteria for choosing the number of clusters, which
right.
is what Sajib originally said.
Exactly.
Okay, if certain, you know, if you choose seven clusters
mm-hmm.
and you see that with seven clusters, you're overlapping on all dimensions in multiple places for multiple clusters, then maybe that's not the right choice.
Mm-hmm.
That could be a criteria for choosing the number of clusters.
Yes.
But you have to, I mean, more importantly, think about this entire process,
yeah.
the whole, you know, life cycle of what you're doing. And try to be as formal as you can at each step.
Remember, you have to take out the intuition. Intuition is good to start with. You cannot write there.
Mm-hmm.
The intuition cannot be the final way of going there.
Yeah. So, I mean, if intuition could be sold, then a lot more research papers would be published.
Yeah. that's the biggest challenge, actually. To transfer from intuition to the formalism. And
yeah.
convince that formalism is correct for the intuition.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes your intuition is just plain wrong.
Exactly.
And you had to go through that exercise to convince yourself and also others that your intuition makes sense and why it does.
And I have to start this one with the hard one, not with the limbo, easy one, hard model. Because in that is
Ruby is hard enough.
Because by looking at the data, it seems that Ruby is easy enough. Other one is not so easy.
For clustering, maybe other points that may be more interesting.
Okay.
Ruby is a better model for hard model for global model.
Okay, so next week we are still in Miami.
Next week we have to follow this. Oh, you must say Miami, yeah.
And the week after also.
Week after? No, not the week after.
Today is the 3rd, and next week is 10th.
Next week we are meeting.
Next week you'll be here. Yeah. So next week there is a meeting. The week after. We might have to choose a different time or skip on a different day. So it's good that you have started on the clustering direction.
I also started the data collection for other benchmarks.
For other benchmarks?
Yes.
Okay, great.
I started with file bench web server.
Okay, great. And are there any other personalities for file bench?
That I will use only two. After that, I will use another benchmark, TPGP, because it's still similar implementation.
What about the parallel collection for TPCC? Do you have another machine or?
Right now, no. Right now, no. Because Ming students are using.
All the other ones?
All the other ones. Actually, they're asking for this machine also, but I somehow called.
No, well, this is important too. I mean, that is a shared cluster. So I'm sure that Ming will agree to let you use this machine. I'll talk to him and see if we can get one of the other machines. Maybe they're working on some deadline at this point, which is why they need most of the machines. Okay, I'll talk to Ming about that. But you're saying that you can use one more machine if we had
the machine, the number 12 one, what Ming gave it to me, there was a problem, remember, back in December. Saying that I couldn't get it to work. There was a disk error problem.
Right.
So the machine gets, so I contacted the VMware guy. I gave him the log of the machine.
Okay.
So he said that there was a serious problem with the SCSI device.
I see. Okay.
So that this, he said it needs to be replaced.
All the disks or?
Not all the disks. One disk of the one disk, because every Mac cluster has two disks. The disk I used for ESX needs to be replaced.
I see.
On Note 12.
Okay. Well, have we sent a request to replace it or?
No.
Well, can you send me an email with that information as to?
I will forward his main quote, main reply, and I will let you know.
And then send me information about the node as well that you're talking about,
okay.
So that I can ask our sysadmins to send the disk and get a new one.
Okay.
But is that the disk you're using right now?
No, that's another machine. That's Node 11 I'm using all the time.
Okay, so the one that you went bad was Note 12?
Note 12 that I rented just on the last moment before you left for India. I rented another machine for parallelizing.
Okay.
That machine had problems.
Okay, so yeah, I mean, this is something that we should act on right away because...
No, the thing is that it didn't have problem when I was using.
Okay.
But after using a 1 week, suddenly I saw that the VMs were shutting down.
I see.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that
and that time was like it's a Christmas, so everybody was gone.
Right. Okay. So let's send it back and get a new replacement for that. Just send me that email with the information, and I'll follow up with ours.
And another important thing is forgetting. So should we send something for the hot cloud? Seems reasonable because I think I need to do a lot of on the modeling on the parallel. If we could send something on the hot cloud.
I think it's doable. I'm just concerned that how much would that need additional work and how much time it would take. And right now,
what is the deadline?
At 7th or 5th of March. It's like the you are thinking about sending the workshop paper. We never
see. What kind of company
is? It's a workshop. It's in conjunction with the USMIX annual technical.
We could possibly send it there, but I think hot cloud is competitive
to
get in, and an algorithm only paper might be hard to. Well, we could try.
Okay.
We could try to send it in. Maybe next week we should discuss this before we go to FAST, and if everyone agrees on submitting, then we need to come up with a plan of action for it.
Okay.
I think the workshop paper that we did put together is also about the same length as Hot Cloud.
It's shorter length.
Well, one thing you might want to do in the meanwhile is to reformat it for Hot Cloud and see what we have.
Okay.
That might give us put us in a better position.
It's a lot shorter length. It's a five page paper.
Okay, then...
We need to cut down the algorithm by a lot.
And Hot Cloud is for how much?
Hot Cloud, what?
How much? What is the length of the paper?
5 pages.
Oh, 5 pages?
We had like around 8 pages.
That's probably the workshop paper.
Well, put the paper in the other format and let's see what... Where we stand in terms of length, and also we have to then... If we decide to go ahead, we have to define the scope. And if things need to be changed or added, we have to work on that at our next meeting.
Okay.
So it would help to have the new format.
Okay. And about the previous paper, the UC edition, I mean, you can start with the experiment section.
Okay.
I mean, it's not with the submodeling, but besides that, it's almost ready.
Should I continue to work in the UTX
yeah.
directory?
ATC11.
Okay.
UTC11 directory.
Okay.
That's the evaluation.txt file. That's the file.
Okay.
Because nobody revised that section.
Okay. Okay. Just in the email, can you, you know, once you do the hot cloud and let me know about that. Okay.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Kaushik. How are things going in your department?
It's okay.
Yeah.